Morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. Your Honor, District Judge Davidson granted summary judgment on this case to obtain benefits due under an ERISA plan, essentially finding as a fact that there was no showing that that was the reason they fired him. To the contrary, Your Honor, we believe that the evidence is overwhelming that that was the reason they fired him, and there's really no basis to find anything else. I'd especially refer the court to Mr. Parker's deposition on pages 354 to 378, bearing in mind, of course, that everything he says has to be taken as true. Mr. Parker was a 13-year employee of Cooper Tire. He had a problem with alcohol, but there's no evidence it ever affected his job performance until the very end. He was his last performance appraisal was excellent, never had perfect attendance, and they bragged on what a good worker he was. And then in November and December, he started having problems that he thought was the flu. He was hospitalized once in November, once in early December. The evidence is that he and his wife and his mother repeatedly called Cooper Tire trying to tell him what the situation was while he's off work, and two parts of that time being hospitalized. They tell him to come up, and the evidence indicates it was on December 17th. Well, I might tell the court this. In the record, he says he and his wife had gone out to the personnel office in December. He, as the doctor says, he was having problems in consciousness and knowing what was going on, but he testifies in his deposition, he and his wife went out to Cooper Tire's HR office in December to ask about disability benefits. But as far as he knows, he's still coming back to work. He doesn't know that he's fixing to have a liver transplant. So on December 17th, they tell him to come up to work, and they want to know what's going on with him and what's going on with the doctor, and they tell him, we got to have a release from the doctor so we can talk to the doctor about what your problem is. So I think he already had the appointment arranged, and he goes to see Dr. Schroeder on December the 20th. And Dr. Schroeder gives him a letter, which is in the record, and the letter says he's got to have a liver transplant. He's in the end stages of liver disease. And it also alludes to his problem with consciousness and knowing what's going on. So he goes back out to Cooper Tire and sees these three executive officials, and here's the way he recounts the conversation. He says, I got to have a liver transplant. And their response, and this is a shocking response to me, they say there comes a time when an employer and an employee have to part ways, and this time has come. So they ask him to come back. Apparently they're still considering something, but they have him come back the next day. Well, they ask him to resign. They tell him, you just need to resign, and we'll let you have your unemployment benefits. So he comes back. He says, I'm not resigning. The next day he comes back. And they tell him the same thing, you know, if you'll resign, we'll let you have your unemployment benefits. No, I'm not resigning. In that case, you're done. And I believe they mail him the letter, but it's dated the next day that he's fired from his employment. So, Your Honor, reasonably, I don't see how any conclusion could possibly be reached other than the reason that they fired him was to keep him from getting employee benefits.
What do you read? What specifically do you see as the district court's error?
Granting summary judgment, wasn't it?
I know, it seems the district court grants summary judgment on a theory almost of estoppel, but then arguendo goes through the three steps that you're disputing now.
It looks to me like he granted summary judgment on the grounds that what I just said, that we didn't prove that that they fired him because of his trying to get employee benefits.
Can you read the opinion that he that the district court actually agreed that there would be evidence of pretext, but that the district court found that you didn't make a prima facie case under the statute, and that's real. But he agreed that this would be evidence of pretext. That's the way I read the opinion. Is that? But he's saying you didn't make out a prima facie case, and so that. And so you'd have to show us that you did make out a prima facie case.
Well, Your Honor, I don't want to be arguing with court. I think what we got to prove is that a reasonable finder of fact could find that they fired him to keep him from getting his ERISA benefits.
I think the Judge Davidson actually said there is evidence in the record that they may have fired him to keep him from getting his benefits, but the issue is, are they ERISA benefits to which he was entitled?
All right, let me address that if I could, John. Okay. First place, here's their argument on the medical benefits. The main reason they'd have fired him, obviously, is because his fish didn't have to pay for a liver transplant. They were self-insured. They do not dispute that the medical bills, the medical costs, are an ERISA-protected benefit. They have exactly one sentence in their brief about the medical records where they say, well, he wasn't going to get them because we fired him. That's what essentially they say. There is no reason, in my opinion, Your Honor, no reasonable fact finder, if the court were to, if this case will go to, it's another question about whether it goes to a jury or not, but before a fact finder, if a fact finder were to find that they fired him for any reason other than employee benefits, there'd just be no evidence to support it. Their explanations are preposterous. They were the ones that acted drunk. They kept trying to give him different days, you know, about when they claim he didn't, he didn't call in.
Their reason, I'm not sure I would characterize their reasons as preposterous. I could see your strong argument on intent to discriminate and pretext, but you're not denying he had an alcohol problem, and it seems like the handbook is clear, three absences and you're out, and even your own client's deposition testimony was they asked me in on the 17th before they had any idea about his liver, and they said, you just got to get a doctor's note. So it seems to me that the company's non-discriminatory reasons were at least found to be true, getting you to the pretext stage. But you're saying the reasons themselves were preposterous?
Well, Your Honor, if they hadn't kept changing back, you know, kept changing the dates.
Okay.
I mean, you know, if that's the reason, why don't you know what the
dates
are?
That's what you're relying on.
That's why I say that.
But that would go more to pretext, right? Because...
Yes, so that would go to pretext. I guess in a sense they gave a reason. Their reason was you didn't properly call in. We had the telephone records where they did, and apparently the only explanation is that they say then, well, you didn't get the right person. You didn't get the foreman or something. To me, it just seems preposterous it could be any other reason. And logically, if we had a jury, I'd try not to get into that.
May I ask, when he does come in, I'm guessing your answer will be the Dr. Schroeder letter contained such tragic news. There was no reason to actually then supply the doctor's letter for the absences, right? That's what they told him to go get, but that, I think, is never in the record, correct?
My understanding of the record was they told him, we want you to get a release from the doctor, and he says, well, I've already got a doctor's, you know, I've already got an appointment, I'll see the doctor, and the doctor writes him that letter, and he thinks he's complying with what they want to do, and so they say, you're fired. Your Honor, if this weren't lawyers, if we were just talking about people, and they fire him just as soon as they find out he's fixing to have a liver transplant, nobody would think it'd be any other reason other than that. I can't imagine any, you know, I understand that there may not be a jury trial. That may be the next question up here. But I can't imagine there being any other reason. They're going to have huge medical bills. The briefs don't even discuss the medical bills aspect of ERISA. They just say
the medical. There's long-term disability, short-term disability, and medical. And I don't find that Judge Davidson really talks about the medical. Did your client get medical benefits? He was entitled to medical benefits, right?
Here's what happened. When they fired him, he gets nothing.
Did he get medical costs paid for before he died?
You get nothing. No,
before he died, were all his medical, before he was fired, I apologize. Before he was fired, did he get all of his medical benefits, medical bills paid for?
No, ma'am. He got nothing. I don't know whether they may have paid some bills before he was fired. I don't know about that. But they fired him on December 21st. All the bills were fixing to be accrued right then when he gets his liver transplant. He didn't have a way to pay for his liver transplant because they fired him.
But under the arrangement for the long term, you may know the contract better than I do, but he could still have applied for them.
No? Could not.
He didn't have a period of 30 days?
You have to be an employee, Your Honor, to be eligible for the benefits. You have to be an employee to be eligible for the benefits. So when they fired him, what they did was they assured he couldn't get any benefits because they fired him. He's no longer eligible.
Okay. Do we have evidence in the record that they told him, contrary to the policy language, that he could not get benefits because he was fired?
I don't think that's ever discussed, but the documents are clear. The district, nobody disputes that. Once you're fired,
yes,
you can't.
It appears to me from reading the contract that he had 30 days after he was terminated that he could still qualify for long-term disability under the plain language of the contract.
I respectfully disagree because the contract is quoted here on page 10 through 12.
In the briefs.
In the briefs.
Counsel, if that were true, what happens to your argument?
In other words, if he could have gotten benefits, I don't think it would have made any difference. I mean, I don't think it had been controlling because we're suing under the retaliation statute. We're not suing under the claim for benefit. We're not suing the insurance company for benefits.
Right.
It wouldn't have made any difference anyway. And it was, if he could have applied, here's the situation he was in, Your Honor. He goes to the doctor on December 20th. The doctor, for the first time, says you need a liver transplant. You're in the end stage of liver disease. When is he supposed to apply? Is he supposed to, instead of taking the letter back to them, he's supposed to call up the insurance company and say, by the way, I've now got to get in a long-term disability benefit plan because otherwise I'm fixing to be fired. So when could he possibly have applied?
Well, even after he was fired within 30 days, well, under the terms of the contract, perhaps.
Your Honor, okay. Maybe that's arguable that he could have, but as I just told Judge Higginson, I just don't believe that. Even so, we're not suing under the failure to pay benefits, the insurance company, we're suing for retaliation. Your Honor, we spend a lot of time in the brief about short-term benefit, you know, about the short-term, and they're saying that's not protected by ERISA. We debate it. To me, it's a moot issue because the medical bills would have been the main issue, but in any event, the short-term is tied to the long-term. If Your Honor would look, I quote the plan here at record 921 and page 10 of my brief. I quote the record, in order the long-term benefits, you get those after exhaustion of what they call the elimination period, and the elimination period is the short-term benefits. So they're tied together. In other words, the amount, if they refuse to pay the short-term, that affects the long-term. The amount of long-term due is affected by the short-term. So they're two.
So for our purposes, does the same test apply in your judgment? In other words, do you have to establish a prima facie case of retaliation first? And if so, did you do so?
Your Honor, to me, the test, their argument is that short-term is not, here's their argument. If we fight him to keep him from getting short-term disability benefits, we can do that. Your only remedy is to go to state court. They're saying that it's not covered by ERISA. Yes, sir, the test is the same. We're saying that the only thing I believe we have to prove is that they fired him in order to keep him from attaining benefits protected by an ERISA plan. And I'm saying the whole deal is a plan. You can't escape, separate it out and say, well, short-term, you know, they got that Labor Department regulation and short-term disability is not covered because the employer pays it. And there's no case on point. You know, I cited a Third Circuit. I haven't seen a case on these circumstances. But I'm just telling the court that logically these are tied exactly together. In other words, the amount of long-term is affected by the short-term, and he's not eligible for long-term until he's exhausted his short-term. In other words, the employer has to pay him for the first 6 months, and then the long term kicks in. That's the way it works, as I see the documents. Your Honor, I understand what you're saying. I understand what Your Honor's, you know, reading of it, Judge Elrod, is, but that part has to be read along with this discussion about the elimination period. In other words, after the short-term benefits. If he were to send a letter in to that insurance company and tell them, I want my long-term benefits, they're going to say you're not an employee. You have to be an employee to be eligible. That's what they're going to say.
Your best, the case you rely on primarily is our Nero decision? Is that?
I believe it was the Elrod, John. I'm not sure I understand. But there's no, what's unusual about this case is, to me, there's no case that put the two together. You know, they've got.
Oh, I didn't mean on the long-term, short-term. I mean over on the overall framework of retaliation.
The primary case they rely on is the Nero case, Fifth Circuit case, which is almost exactly like, Nero would be right on this case. The only reason Nero is any different is because we have this debate about the short term or the long term.
Yeah. What? Any quick thoughts on the peer review that occurred?
It's ridiculous. those are the employer's people. What do you think they're going to say? I think they did have two employees on the panel, and they voted for him. You know, those are the personnel managers, and the fact that they, you know, he goes up there and tries to tell them, they're not going to ever give the rule for the employee. It's not an impartial. I mean, it's not like you had an impartial hearing or anything. That's the employer's people. Your Honor, if there are not any other questions, I think that's all I had.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Counsel. You saved time for rebuttal.
May it please the Court. I'm Mary Clay Morgan on behalf of Cooper Tire. Your Honor, Mr. Wade began his argument by saying this is a case to obtain benefits, but that's actually not the case. This is not a case under Section 502 of ERISA to obtain either medical benefits, short-term or a long-term disability. This is a case under ERISA Section 510, so the issue is termination. And there's an element of prima facie case under Section 510, which is that the plaintiff has to be physically qualified to perform the job. And that's true of any employment discrimination statute because
you do not have to be physically qualified if what you're trying to do is get disability benefits under ERISA. But there's not a single case that says that.
Actually, Your Honor, both the Holtzclaw case and the Oatman case involved long-term disability benefits.
But
and both
you don't have to be qualified at the time you're going to go on disability benefits. You have to have previously been qualified to do the job, but when you're going on disability, you don't have to be fit to do the job. That's just nonsensical.
Well, Your Honor, actually, what the Holtzclaw court said, this court said in Holtzclaw, was but the plaintiff had applied for long-term and received long-term disability benefits, and then she applied for her job back.
Yeah, that's to get your job back. If you want to go back to work, you have to be healthy and fit, and that's reasonable. But if you are just saying you're going on disability, you don't have to show that you're healthy and fit because that's completely inconsistent. That's a requirement if you're trying to come back to work after you've been out and they're going to discriminate against you because you've been out and they've got replaced you or whatever.
Your Honor, I do think that Holtzclaw applies because this is a claim that he was wrongfully terminated, and so he has to prove that but for the termination, he could have kept his job. As the court said in Holtzclaw, the purpose of an employment discrimination case is to keep people in their jobs, keep them from being wrongfully terminated. And that's what the claim is here, that he was wrongfully terminated. So if he could not otherwise perform his job.
That seems very after the fact. You say you're winning the case because of the Schroeder letter?
Because of what?
The Schroeder letter saying that he's an end-stage liver.
I'm saying that there's an element of the prima facie case that he has to prove that, but for the termination, he could have kept himself in this job.
Your proof of that is the very letter he gave you?
Well, my proof of that is his testimony and his deposition. The plaintiff testified, it's in the record at page 725, that he has not been able to work a day since before his termination, that he has been physically unqualified for any employment since the date of his termination. He testified that even if he had been given 12 weeks of FMLA leave, he could not have come back. He was physically.
This argument that you're making now is the one that the district court relied on?
No, Your Honor, the district court mentioned in a footnote that physical qualification for the position is a requirement of the prima facie case, but did not rest its ruling on that.
Okay, so you're asking us to affirm on the basis of the footnote?
Well, no, Your Honor, I'm saying that this is a separate basis that supports summary judgment.
Okay, assuming we don't. Except that separate basis. Can you move on to some other bases? Or
yes,
maybe you want to go into it more.
Well, the district court held that there's a separate element of the prima facie case that the plaintiff did not meet, and that is proof of specific intent.
He said you had to have actually applied for the long-term benefits. That's not in the case law or the statute.
That you have to actually apply for the benefits?
Yeah, and that's what the opinion says, and there's no basis for that. Or maybe you want to tell me that there is some basis for that.
Well, Your Honor, I believe that what the court said, there was no evidence of specific intent because there's no causation. There's no proof that his termination actually deprived him of any benefits.
But the statute, I think Judge Elrod's pointing out, is future-looking as well. It contemplates two clauses, who interfere with rights that they may be eligible to. So it would seem he made a mistake there. It isn't that he had to have applied before he's terminated, because he might still have been eligible if we're reading the contract correctly.
And we're talking about the long-term disability
benefits?
Yes, and I believe that he actually had already attained his right to those benefits. He just failed to apply for them. The contract said that if the disability arises while you're insured.
He attained them, but then he forfeits them because 30 days go by. But for the discharge, he wouldn't have forfeited them.
But, Your Honor, there's nothing in the long-term disability plan. I dispute this that Mr. Wade said there is. There's nothing in the plan that says you have to be employed when you apply. It just says if the disability arises while you're insured.
Do you agree that the 30-day clock then starts ticking on the 21st?
There's two dates that have been pointed to in the record as to when his disability arose.
Well, forget the Social Security determination.
Okay. Well, December 20th.
They discharge him on the 21st.
Correct.
And as I read the contract, then he's got 30 days to apply.
I believe that the contract says the disability from when, the date when the disability arose, not from termination. I think the disability, his letter from his doctor was December 20th, the day before.
Okay, so 30 days.
So 30 days from the 20th, and there's nothing in the policy that says that, I mean, the fact that he was already, he presented a letter saying he was disabled on December 20th, firing him the next day couldn't retroactively make him make it so that the disability didn't arise while he was insured. He was insured.
Right, but that means that the district court was incorrect when the district court said because he didn't apply for the benefits, he can't make his prima facie case. You concede that.
I
that's
do
why
concede.
You led with that other argument, isn't it?
Well, Your Honor, I think the district court is wrong that you have to be employed while you apply.
Yeah, but you don't have to have actually applied. The district court was wrong, right?
Well, I think that there's no proof of proximate cause. He could have applied. There's no proof that his termination is what kept him from getting long-term disability benefits.
But the focus of the elements of this statute are on the intent to discriminate.
And, Your Honor, there's no proof that the people who terminated him even knew he had long-term disability coverage. It's an entirely optional policy, and Mr. Parker did not even have it for 9 years. There's no proof in the record that they knew he had the coverage.
Okay. Can you talk about medical benefits? The district court didn't talk about medical benefits, and medical benefits is definitely part of the ERISA protection, even if short-term disability is not.
Yes, Your Honor.
And the medical benefits has been overlooked, and medical event is actually a big component of this case, and it's completely overlooked and not very much talked about in the briefs and not talked about in the district court opinion.
Yes, Your Honor, and there's no proof that his termination actually deprived him of medical benefits he would have otherwise been able to keep, because it's undisputed again that he was unable to work. And he's presented no evidence that if he had not been terminated, he could have stayed on Cooper's insurance because he could not have stayed in his job. And in fact, he was offered COBRA, which would have kept him on Cooper's in self-insured insurance, but he did not opt for that. So there's no proof that terminating him is what kept him from getting his medical benefits, because he could not have stayed an employee because it's undisputed he could not have physically worked and couldn't have stayed on our benefits for that reason under Holtzclaw. And then also there's no proof that terminating him could have gotten him off our benefits at all, because he could have kept them under COBRA. He just
did you not. Argue this to the district court? Why is this not in the analysis?
It was in the courts, in the briefs of the district court. I can't explain why it's not in the opinion of the medical benefits, except for that it wasn't a focus of the plaintiff's briefing in the court below.
Do you agree with Judge? Oh, go ahead.
Two things factually that trouble me, and Mr. Waits has raised this. I mean, it when you just look at the timing of everything, and when you try to apply, as we call it, the smell test, it just doesn't seem right, it seems to me. It's just something not right here. For a number of reasons. For instance, the termination letter had wrong dates. Would you agree with that?
Yes, sir.
The dates of absences, that is. And then there was a second termination letter, at least, that sought to clarify, offered additional dates, and those were wrong as well, right?
Yes, sir.
And then it came down officially, I guess, and tell me if I'm right here, that the reason for the termination was based upon a single day that he failed to call in and say, I can't come to work because I'm ill. Is that right?
It was actually 3 days that he failed to, and that's under the policy.
Right.
That 3 days is an abandonment of the job.
Right. On the 17th, did they tell him these are the 3 days you need to go get records for?
On the 17th, yes, Your Honor. I believe
the record will reflect they gave him the right dates then, even though three times afterwards they didn't?
I'm not sure if they told him specific dates. They said for
How can he get doctor records for dates that the company can't get straight as to which dates they are?
Yeah, and that's part of my concern. Was he even given the opportunity to reply or respond adequately to the purported grounds for the termination?
Well, Your Honor, I think that if it came down to do you believe Cooper Tire, I can see that is a fact issue. But they still have to prove not just do you believe Cooper Tire's reasons. They have to prove that it was not just a pretext, but a pretext intended to deprive him of ERISA-protected benefits.
And do you think that can analysis or factual determination can be made on summary judgment?
Your Honor, I believe that his termination did not, in fact, deprive him of any ERISA-protected benefits, that there's, whether or not you believe Cooper Tire's stated reason, there's no evidence it was a pretext for ERISA-based discrimination.
Well, that itself is a fact-based analysis, correct?
Whether or not his termination deprived him of ERISA-protected benefits? Or whether it was a pretext for ERISA-based...
Right, pretext, the issue of whether there was a pretext.
whether there was a pretext for ERISA-based discrimination, I think that there's, no matter whether you believe Cooper Tire's stated reason, there's no evidence that there was proximate cause, that there, that his termination...
What's your best case for the fact that, let's say the employer does want to retaliate. They incorrectly think that he's going to get benefits, so they want to retaliate and deprive him of them. Do you have any case that says, if that intent exists, just because there's a mistake of fact, he can't have any 510 relief?
Your Honor, I know of no cases that just punish bad intent in a vacuum.
No, I'm asking you, do you have a case that stands for the proposition you're asserting to us, which is that assume they were acting pretextually, but it turns out no matter what they did, he wasn't going to get the benefits.
Well, Your Honor, there's numerous cases that we've cited in our brief where you have to show that the termination actually caused loss of benefits. They're on pages 17 and 18 in the brief. And in addition to the cases in the brief, there's a Sixth Circuit case, Hamilton versus Starcom MediaVest Group, in which the court
That's
held...
That's in your brief?
The Sixth Circuit case is not. It's 522 F3rd 623, where the court says that there...
You need to provide that by the end of the business day tomorrow with a 28J, and the other side has an opportunity to respond to that case since you didn't cite it in your brief.
Yes, Your Honor. And there's also a older Southern District of Texas case that is on point. It's unpublished, but in which the plaintiff did not apply for benefits and presented...
Did you cite that case in your brief?
No, Your Honor. I can report both of those.
Can you at least tell us what case it is?
Yes, Your Honor. It's Garcia versus Fulbright and Jaworski, Southern District of Texas, 1996. And in that case, the plaintiff did not apply for benefits and presented no evidence that the defendant knew that she even intended to apply for benefits. And therefore, there's no ERISA Section 510 claim.
I'm sorry. We've had this multiple times this week, and you're the unfortunate beneficiary of the fact that we've had this multiple times this week. I just want to say here today in open court that if you know that you might cite cases that are not in your brief, you really have a duty to give them to the opposing counsel before the argument so that they're not surprised, that you also have a duty to the court to supplement with the 28J. We have open arguments, and we're not laying low with our good cases. It's very important that that process is respected.
I apologize. Thank you.
Do you agree with the question that was asked to your opposing counsel that if you read the district court's order beyond towards the end, the district court seems to acknowledge that as to pretext, there are sufficient facts, the email about there's a long story, the dates, so it's sufficient facts just to go to the jury. Do you agree with my reading of the district court's order in that
part? I agree with that. And I do agree that if it came down to just motive, that there would be an issue for the jury, but as we stated in the briefs, it still has to be proven that it's a specific intent to deprive of ERISA-protected benefits, and because there was no proximate cause here, that can't be proven.
And that's these cases you've just given us.
In addition to the cases cited in pages 17 and 18 in our brief, Hinosa versus Jostens, Purdue versus Burger King.
So what kind of proximate cause? I mean, let's explore that a bit more. What would be required in your judgment to prove sufficiently to prove that that there was a prima facie case of retaliation?
To prove that his loss of benefits was a result of his termination?
Right.
Well, Your Honor, if he had applied for benefits and then been told, no, I'm sorry, you can't get those benefits because you were terminated, that would be proof that it was proximately caused by his termination. But there's just no evidence under the long-term disability contract that would have happened, because there's no requirement that he had to have applied while he was employed, just that the disability arose while he was employed. Your Honor, the plaintiff has pointed to Nero as the case that is most applicable here, and I would like to point out that Nero is distinguishable because on one ground, there's no question in that case but that the plaintiff would have received the medical benefits if he had not been terminated. There was no claim that he was physically unqualified for the position and that, but for his termination, he could have continued being an employee and received those medical benefits. That's not the case.
And just
here.
So I understand your argument. Your argument is he could never have received them because the disability date is what? Are you saying it's the November 20th date? Or you're saying we don't know which it is, but either one.
Either one. Either
but
one
do
he
you
was...
know which one it is? Is what would you recommend that it be?
I believe that the only facts in the record are that the Social Security Administration determined on November 20th, and his doctor told him in the letter that he brought to Cooper Tire on December 20th. And under either date, that is, it was before
the
his termination.
The problem with that analysis is unless you've got a case that makes it, and I'll look at these cases, but it's a very heartless world, because why in the world would this man be thinking about applying for benefits when he's just been told he's got end-stage liver disease?
And well,
you may just say, well, that's the contract, and it's
that is the terms of the contract. I mean, the contract says proof of loss within 30 days, and that's a contract not with Cooper Tire. It's between plaintiff and the Hartford, and that's the proof of loss. And it also says 30 days are a reasonable time, so he could have argued, even if he applied outside of that 30 days, he could have argued that was still reasonable. And throughout this litigation, it's been raised that he has not applied. He's never even filed a late application for benefits. And made an argument that it was unreasonable to expect him to apply within 30 days for the reason you stated. There's just no proof that his termination is what caused him to fail to apply. He had the contract himself, which told him where to send a proof of loss, and he just failed to do so.
Okay, that's for the long-term disability.
That's correct.
For the medical benefits, you can see that that's an ERISA plan, right?
That's correct.
And so it's got to all be on that he's unable to do the job, and we got to follow Holtzclaw. Is that
that's correct? And I believe that's what Holtzclaw says, that we protect your right to stay in your employment if you're able to stay in your employment.
Okay. Because so medical is on that point. Long-term is not on that point, but on that he didn't actually lose the opportunity even because he had 30 days.
That's
although, is there any evidence in the record that he was told something to the contrary about
There's
the long-term?
Not. He admits that he never discussed it with Cooper Tire. That they never told him he wasn't qualified or anything about his about when he needed to apply.
Is there a time period at which he would have been eligible for the medical benefits that he didn't get? You know, like either maybe 30 days after he was fired or during the time period in December while it's in limbo. Is there a time period at which he would still have a viable claim under the medical benefits?
There's no evidence in the record that he could have remained on our insurance after he was no longer able to work.
Well, I'm assuming that we don't accept the November point. Mm-hmm. And so we didn't know he was not able to work till December the 20th. And I don't think he immediately that day gets off the insurance. I think there's a procedure at which you get notice and time. So is there a time period where he didn't get medical benefits he should have? That whereas he's in the limbo state between being taken off the insurance.
No, Your Honor. The only evidence in the record is that he was offered COBRA to continue his insurance, and he declined that. And again, I'll point out that this is not a claim for recovery of any medical benefits he claims he was owed. It's not a Section 502 claim. And I don't believe that even Mr. Parker has claimed that Cooper Tire failed to pay his medical benefits before he was terminated. That he was out in the hospital for a full month, and that was while he was an employee, and he has not claimed that we failed to pay those bills.
Okay. Are you saying that he could even now, the benefits through the long-term disability retroactively could it be applied for in any way?
Well, that would be a matter between the plaintiff and the Hartford. I mean, the policy says 30 days are a reasonable time. And so, I mean, there's nothing to stop him from trying. He just has not done so. So, Your Honor, we believe that the summary judgment should be affirmed. If the court has no further questions, I
had one legal question.
Yes, please.
Do you know of a case that says that proximity and time, temporal link alone, have we ever said that the intense proximity of time that you have in this case alone would suffice for the prima facie case?
Your Honor, I don't know of a specific case, but we don't deny that it is a close proximity of time. I just didn't. We assert that that is not a protected
activity.
I
know your position is against it. I'm just wondering because you probably looked at the law. Okay.
Thank you.
Your Honor, if the court please, I kind of feel like counsel and I are like two ships passing in the night and not really communicating. I wanted to refer the court to this particular page of there's a brochure quoted in here. Maybe I've lost it in that short attempt. It's cited on page 12. They gave him a brochure explaining what the policy means. This is not the policy, but it's the brochure. explaining the policy, and it's quoted on, it's found in the record at page 912, and it's quoted in my brief on page 12. And the question, this is a question, when will my coverage end? They're talking about the long-term disability benefits. Your coverage will end on the earliest of the following. Here's number five, the date your employer terminates your employment. So that's why I say, Your Honor, once they fire him, he can't get long-term disability benefits. The benefits, and he can't get, according to them, they just told you, he can't get medical bills. So what would be an issue when he gets diagnosed that I have to have a liver transplant? He's now coming up right now in the immediate future, if he can find a liver and if he can get some money to pay for it, he needs to get his medical bills paid. The logical reason, and I don't want to just belabor this, you know, like skip over prima facie case. Well, the prima facie case is that he has a protected activity, which he does. He tells them, I'm fixing to have a liver transplant. Then an adverse decision, he has that. They fire him immediately at the same time. And the court has said in many cases, never over just being one, that close proximity in time makes out the prima facie case. That's the prima facie case. He's made it. And then the question is, was there proof of pretext once they give it? So that's there. I might indicate, Your Honor, in that Nassar case, this court's case that's before the Supreme Court now, they're going to talk about, you know, whether it's but-for or whether it's motivating factor. In the context of Title VII, I don't know whether that will affect this case or not, but that Nassar case, Nassar v. Southwestern, is before the Supreme Court now.
I think the other side pretty much concedes there would be pretext if there could be a prima facie case. It has to be, and the reason that it has to be because of ERISA benefits, and so that's different. So that's not a but-for versus, you know, that's not the standard of it is not at issue in this case.
Okay, thank you.
So, Your Honor,
the only thing I'm saying, there's certainly a prima facie case. There's evidence of pretext. Therefore, this was a factual question for the jury. As I said, I don't see how it could be any other reason. They talked about COBRA. Your Honor, COBRA's insurance you pay for. He's lost his job. He can't buy COBRA insurance. We're just passing in the night. I don't understand what they're talking about.
Well, if he's not eligible to work, they say that under our case law and under ERISA, if he's not eligible to work, he can't get medical benefits.
Your Honor, I understand there's plenty of language to that, but that's not in this context. We have a person now who has become disabled, and he has an employee benefit program, which essentially pays him, as long as he's an employee, it pays him short-term disability. The employer pays that. When that runs out, then the insurance, the long-term policy kicks in, and he also gets medical benefits. That's the heart of what he gets. And that's one of the main reasons people want to work at Cooper Tires, because of those benefits. And what they're saying is, we don't have to give you any of that because all we got to do is fire you. And it's just preposterous to say he's supposed to pick up the phone when the doctor gives him that letter and apply for benefits, or otherwise he's out, because as soon as they find out, they're going to fire him, and they did.
Well, I think on the long term, I think they're saying that you still could have gotten the long term, but I understand you said that you have evidence in the record that they told your client something different saying it was the earliest of the dates at which he became ineligible by this brochure that you've just read.
Yes, ma'am.
But their point is that he still could have gotten the disability long-term.
I guess if they lied in their brochure, maybe he can. Their brochure says he can't get benefits if he's not an employee. He's got to be an employee.
What about her, you have a little time left, what about her observation that Section 502?
It's five, I may have misquoted the section. It's five, it's the re- I'd have to look. It's 510, I believe.
And that's what you're proceeding on, but she was...
It's the retaliation section. What we're saying, Your Honor, is they fired him to keep from getting the benefits.
Right.
The damages, if we ever get to the damage stage, would be the benefits that he should have gotten.
Do you still have a claim under state law for the short-term disability because it's not ERISA, assuming argument that that's the case?
Your Honor, in all deference, that is such a great question. If we filed a suit like that, I'm sure they would say, well, this is preempted by ERISA because this affects your long-term benefits. I mean, if Your Honor could throw something in the opinion about whether we could go apply, it would be great. But I would bet you anything, if we applied, they'd say, well, that's preempted by ERISA because that affects your long-term benefits. So they got us going and coming, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, this concludes the arguments for this session of the court. We again thank Chief Judge Jackson for being with us, and The court will stand adjourned pursuant to the usual order.